as we fly toward the 2024 presidential election, the likely Republican nominee Donald Trump still denies the outcome of the last election, which he lost 4 years ago. Election officials, under strain and even under threat, are already training poll workers to make sure voting in November runs smoothly. Meanwhile, state legislatures were busy last year passing new election laws that could restrict voting rights. Our next guest has a solution for all of this. He's calling for a constitutional amendment that would, once and for all, guarantee the right to vote. Rick Hassan is an election law expert at UCLA. His new book is called A Real Right to Vote: How a Constitutional Amendment Can Safeguard American Democracy. Rick, welcome.
It's great to be with you.
And listen, I'll be honest, when I first saw your book, my first thought was, voting is written all over the Constitution. Don't we have this right already?
Yeah, I think that is a common response. Of course it's in the Constitution, then you go looking for it, and what you see is that at the time of the original Constitution, there was no right to vote for president. That was done by state legislatures. There was no right to vote for U.S. Senate. That was done by state legislatures. And when it came to the House of Representatives, it was up to each state to impose their own qualifications. So no one was really guaranteed the right to vote. And then later amendments to the Constitution never affirmatively guaranteed a right to vote. They just said, if you're going to hold an election, don't discriminate on the basis of race or sex or being between 18 and 20. And in the year 2000, in the case of Bush versus Gore, the famous case that ended the dispute in that election year, the Supreme Court said, you have no constitutional right to vote for president. It's only because state legislatures give it to you and they could take it away at any time.
You mentioned some of the voting-related amendments. I was interested to be reminded how many of them there are, the 15th, the 19th, the 23rd, the 26th. There's more than that even. Why have all those changes to the Constitution failed to protect so many people?
Well, they've been a matter of compromise. Back at the time of the 15th Amendment, you remember at the end of the Civil War, we get the Reconstruction Amendments, the 13th that eliminates slavery, the 14th that, among other things, does equal protection and due process, and the 15th that says no discrimination in voting on the basis of race. There was a proposal to have universal voting in the United States for, you know, all adult citizens, and it was rejected as too radical. There were new immigrants coming in. There were poor people. There were lots of people who some people in power did not want to enfranchise. And so, although over time there have been proposals to actually put it in the Constitution, just like it's in the Constitution in Canada or in Germany, most other constitutions are newer. They affirmatively guarantee the right to vote. Ours doesn't. And so it gets cobbled together by the courts looking at various little pieces of the Constitution.
In fact, you describe a modern Supreme Court that has been skeptical of voting rights. As we've seen, there have been recent rulings, for instance, that have undermined the power of the Voting Rights Act. How does this court view voting rights compared to the justices of different eras?
Aside from people having the misconception that there's an affirmative right to vote protected in the Constitution, there's also a belief that the Supreme Court is a great protector of voting rights. In fact, that's not true. In the 235-year history of the Supreme Court, there was only about a decade in the mid to late 50s to the late 1960s, the so-called Warren Court era, led by Chief Justice Earl Warren, in which the court was really protective of voting rights. That's when we got decisions like the one person, one vote rule. But in more recent years, the court has been skeptical. Not only has it not expanded voting rights, it has limited Congress's power to protect voting rights under the parts of the Constitution that ban discrimination in voting. And so in 2013, in the famous case of Shelby County versus Holder, the Supreme Court killed a key part of the Voting Rights Act, saying that it exceeded Congress's authority to be able to protect voting rights against race discrimination.
Which is why you make the argument for what would be the 28th Amendment, and you have a number of different versions that you suggest. Some would be harder to get through than others. But explain what the most basic version of a constitutional amendment for a right to vote would look like. What would it do?
I think it would do three things. One thing, it would assure political equality. It would enshrine some of those Warren Court era cases that could be in danger before this current conservative Supreme Court. It would also lower the amount of election litigation, because one of the things I would do is set up a system where states would have to proactively register voters or make the federal government do it and provide voters with identification number. This would eliminate so much of the litigation that we have around our elections and make our elections less contentious. And finally, it would make it harder to steal elections. In 2020, we saw this risk of election subversion. Putting an affirmative right to vote in the Constitution for president would make it harder to make the argument that state legislatures could come in and take that power back or overturn voters' rights.
Well, this is what I kept thinking about reading this book. You know, there are endless lawsuits even today testing the limits of the constitutional right to free speech, to the right to own guns, you know, the First and Second Amendment. I mean, wouldn't the courts inevitably have to rule on lawsuits that would test the limits of a 28th Amendment? Well, wouldn't you still be in the same bind?
Yes and no. So, of course, there would be lawsuits. But the way that I've tried to write it is much more specific than the kinds of amendments that we have seen in the Constitution, giving courts specific instruction about how much power Congress has in this area and how courts have to balance voters' rights against state interests. The bottom line really is this is the best way to try to empower voters. And let me go back. The 15th Amendment, coming at the end of the Civil War, it was in 1903, the Supreme Court said, sorry, we can't enforce it. We don't know what to do about it. It's not till 1965 when Congress acts in the Voting Rights Act to really empower African-American voters. And that's when you start seeing African-American voting in the South. Same kind of thing. The laboring oar here is going to be Congress. It's going to be people acting in the states with their state constitutions, strengthening voting rights within each state. You have to think about this as a long-term project for voter empowerment and not the kind of thing that's going to happen tomorrow.
A lot of Republicans will make the argument that Democrats would use this constitutional amendment as a chance to increase voting for their party. Is there any proof that expanding a constitutional right to vote would benefit one party over the other?
So there is this common idea that when you make voting harder, you're helping Republicans. And in fact, this is not true, and especially with the nature of the Republican Party changing, with the Republican Party now appealing more to working class voters, having a rule that makes it easier for people to vote could actually help the Republican Party in some places. This is a pro-voter proposal. It's not a pro-Democratic Party or pro-Republican Party proposal. There's lots of things in here for Republicans and conservatives. I'm not taking on, at least in the basic amendment, the Electoral College or the composition of the Senate. You'd still have voting in the Electoral College, but what you would say is, within each state, it's going to be the popular vote that's going to control. And let's put the voters in charge, because ultimately, our democracy derives its power from the people.
But you know this is going to be tough. You have to get Congress to approve it by two-thirds vote, and then at least 38 states have to ratify it through their state legislatures. We have a Congress that can't even pass a bipartisan immigration bill that both parties essentially agreed with. So in a time of such division, what makes you think that you could do something like this?
It's a great question, and it's a question I tackle head-on in the book because it's on everyone's mind. And I would go back and take another lesson from history. In 1874, a woman named Virginia Minor went to the Supreme Court. She said, I'm a white woman from Missouri. The Constitution says that I have all of the privileges or immunities of citizenship. I should be allowed to vote. And the Supreme Court in Minor versus Happersett said, sorry, you are a citizen, but you don't get the right to vote. That's really up to state law. That was 1874. In the next decades, until 1920, there were state-by-state movements to enfranchise women. By the time we get to 1920 and the passage of the 19th Amendment, barring discrimination in voting on the basis of sex, 30 states had adopted in their state constitutions a right to vote for women. This is what I'm envisioning. It may not be us, it may be our children or our grandchildren, but there can be a popular movement to try to enshrine voting rights first in state constitutions. It's already in there, but not in a really strong way. This is what we need to do first on a local and state level and then move it to the national level.
So parting words here, if we can't figure this out, where do you think we stand as a country?
I think, well, we're in trouble. If you look at other countries, peer countries, advanced democracies, when they're holding elections, they're not having a crisis. They're not wondering, will there be armies of lawyers massing to figure out what the election rules are going to be? They're not running to their highest courts to try to do this. You don't have states changing rules. We need to make fundamental change or we're going to be in for more of the same. The risk of increased election litigation and uncertainty, the risk of election subversion, the risk of voter disenfranchisement. All of these things are up for grabs until we make some more fundamental change to our Constitution. So we can just muddle through or we could actually try to do something bold and right.
Rick Hassan is an election law expert with UCLA. His new book is A Real Right to Vote, How a Constitutional Amendment Can Safeguard American Democracy. Thank you so much.
Thank you.